From your world news headquarters on the World Wide Web, it's time for your daily dose of sanity. This is the Maria Heller Show. Maria Heller is a published author, founder of The Universal Wheel, a lifestyle and philosophy based on our interconnectedness to all living things, a Reiki master, and delivers the news with spiritual views. How many intuitive news decoders, animal rights activists, and vegetarian broadcasters are there? Just one, Maria. Maria has provided independent news for a smart audience for over 13 years now on the Maria Heller Show, available at maria.net.
M-E-R-I-A.net.
And now, here is your host, the mouth that roars, Maria Heller.
Good morning, world. Maria here, alive and kicking. Welcome to Roaring Truth with my excellent co-host, Jim Fetzer. Here we sit on the almost 2 days away from the 13th anniversary of the beginning of the One World Order, 9/11. And this is something that, of course, we must never forget, especially with so much scuttlebutt out there of a false flag and so many things indicating that they may want to reuse the date one more time. So let me say good morning to my co-host, Jim. Good morning, Jim.
Oh, Maria, it's great to be back with you.
Oh, it's always good to have you on. You know, somebody forwarded me something this morning about an emergency terror alert, supposedly for the Southwest, from El Paso, Las Cruces, New Mexico, Tucson, Phoenix, Yuma, San Diego, and L.A. And, I mean, you got 12 missing planes, so they want us to believe, you know, we're coming up on, you know, the Illuminati's favorite numbers, 9/11. I don't doubt anything.
Well, most of those planes were destroyed in place, so actually that's an exaggerated threat.
Mm-hmm.
The whole business with ISIS is pretty bizarre, Maria. The two alleged beheadings were clearly fake. There are multiple indications the production values were too good. You had a central casting bad guy. He had a British accent. The victims didn't look terrorized. The attempts to cut them displayed no blood. They were, you know, English with Arabic subtitles rather than the other way around. It's very clear, I think, that this is a fraud and that ISIS appears to be contrived to justify getting NATO into Iraq and Syria, where I have no doubt they're going to use their opportunity to take out Assad's forces. I think that's what this is really all about.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I got to tell you, with so many weird things happening in the United States, I don't put anything past these people. I was looking at that respiratory disease that these children are getting. There's already 1,000 of them that have, you know, ended up sick with it. And, you know, I wonder about that nuclear radiation leak at WIPP in New Mexico. And if that's what's making these kids sick, which they're calling an enterovirus.
Well, and it's also clear that there are a lot of radiation effects from Fukushima that the government doesn't want broadcast. I have a friend who lives in the Seattle area, and he's been reporting, you know, high levels of radiation even in dairy products there. So when he goes shopping, you know, he finds his cheese is contaminated. The salmon is inedible. He has lots of reports about lesions on salmon that the manufacturers are simply cutting off and going ahead and processing. But I think that the effects of Fukushima are completely devastating, and we really simply are only beginning to learn about what's really going on.
Absolutely. And I mean, I've been covering that, you know, twice a week on my show for 3 years now, and I don't see any, you know, real stories on it in the supposed media.
Isn't that amazing? I mean, you got one of the major stories of the decade.
Of our lives.
Even of the last 50 years, and it's not receiving any coverage to speak of at all.
No, it isn't. And, you know, there's a new TV series out called Manhattan, and it's really dealing with the Manhattan Project out of, I believe it was New Mexico. And, you know, the people that were involved in, you know, making the first bombs and trying to compete with the bombs Europe had. But I'll tell you what, when you look at the show, I don't know who writes it. What's interesting is the same kind of disappearing of our own doctors, our own scientists, the spying on their own people on the Manhattan Project. Nothing has changed in 60 years, Jim.
That's really shocking, isn't it? And it's clear the government's pretenses to look after the welfare of the people are simply protestations that have no merit. They don't do it. And it's like the police serving and protecting in Ferguson, where they're breaking out the heavy equipment, the military surplus, and treating the population as though they were enemies.
Right. Absolutely. Well, hopefully some good will come out of Ferguson. I got a few good, you know, stories as a result of that kid getting killed. And you look
I watched Lawrence O'Donnell the other evening, and he had three different witnesses on, Maria. And each of the witnesses reporting something going on in the vehicle. One called it an altercation. One said it was wrestling. A third said it was punches. But it's very clear that this fellow, Michael Brown, ran away, that the officer got out, and there were two flurries of shots, initially six shots, and then four more after a space of time. And it appears, you know, after a warning shot that Michael Brown turned around, and then he wound up being wounded six times, though some of those wounds might have been from the same bullet. But most importantly, twice in the head, once in the very top of the head, which indicates he had to be either kneeling down or completely prone. And the other four shots appear to have been fired at his accomplice or friend, Johnson, who, although they missed him in that instance. But I think it's very clear that this officer committed an offense. They later claimed he'd suffered a broken eye socket. And when you looked at the photograph of this guy in the hospital, he had the wrong hairline. He didn't have the same face. It was a different person. And the eye socket that was injured was the right eye socket, when if there had been fisticuffs involving Michael Brown, it would have been the left. So the whole thing was a fraud.
Absolutely. Well, you know, talk about frauds. Who's the kings of frauds in FX but Israel? You know, it's now been exposed that the film they showed of the hospital in, I think it's called Wafa, where they said Hamas was firing missiles from, ended up being proven to be a film from 2009. So today,
it's outrageous, isn't it? It's very much like on 9/11, when between the destruction of the two towers, they were showing footage of Palestinians rejoicing, as though they were watching what was going on in New York and taking great joy. In fact, they were just as dumbfounded as the rest of the world and were watching in stunned disbelief. They even had a report that the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine had taken responsibility. I mean, this is such a classic sign of who was actually responsible, Maria. The Israelis go way out of their way to point the finger at the opposite. You know, the Palestinians, anything they can blame on the Palestinians. When the five dancing Israelis from Liberty State Park, who'd been celebrating, high-fiving, and filming the destruction of the Twin Center, were arrested in their white van from Urban Moving Systems, they told the arresting officer, "We are not the problem. They are the problem. The Palestinians are the problem." And in the van, they found box cutters, residue of explosive, passports, money. These guys were held incarcerated for 71 days until an assistant to then Secretary Attorney General John Ashcroft directed their release. They went back to Israel, and three of them appeared on Israeli TV talking about their having been there to document the destruction of the Twin Towers, which obviously implied foreknowledge. The assistant who directed their release was Michael Chertoff, a joint U.S.-Israeli citizen who would become our first director of Homeland Security. It's all quite unbelievable.
Right, and let's not leave out how much money Michael Chertoff, as I like to call him, made on those TSA machines.
Oh, I know. It's outrageous. I mean, it used to be fun to go to the airport, you know, meet your friends coming in right at the gate, joy, celebration, hugs. And now you have to wait until they all dutifully have gone through the whole security thing, come all the way outside the airport. Going in and through is just a great pain. It makes flying no longer any fun. So if the airlines are losing money, I mean, the reasons are obvious, especially when the whole thing is contrived, because 9/11 was a completely fabricated event.
Absolutely. Well, you know, one of the things that I wanted to talk about and kick off the show, because I've let people know we're going to be talking about 9/11 today, is September 10th, because there were a lot of things on September 10th that people have forgotten. First of all, that's the day Rumsfeld said there were $2.3 trillion missing from the Pentagon.
That's exactly right, Maria. That was really quite a stunning acknowledgement. Mm-hmm. And I can see where he would have used it as an excuse to direct the section chief to bring all of his accountants, budget analysts, and financial experts into the West Wing with all the documents and records to track the missing $2.3 trillion so that they could all be taken out in a single stroke. In fact, I was stunned when I looked at the list of 125 casualties from the Pentagon, mm-hmm. not from the plane, because no Boeing 757 actually hit the Pentagon, and noticed 36 of them were either budget analysts or accountants or financial experts who appear to have been lost in that really massive effort to completely wipe the slate clean. And it's so strange that he would make that announcement on a Monday, Maria, because as everyone knows, early in the week, a story like that will, as they say, grow legs and become something that everyone begins talking about. It's as though he knew mm-hmm. some event was going to intervene that was going to wipe that from consciousness, and he'd be able to waltz into the halls of Congress and ask for hundreds of billions more in defense spending, which is precisely what happened.
Right, and when you think about it, that the bookkeeping section was the part that had just been reinforced. And
yeah,
bingo, what a lucky
right.
break, the missile hits the bookkeeping section of the Pentagon. And people need to remember, they have to have probably one camera every 12 inches in the Pentagon. We have no film of 9/11 from the Pentagon.
You're absolutely right, Maria. There should have been some 80 to 84 different videos that would have given us footage. The FBI was out collecting them within minutes of the alleged strike. That's a very peculiar thing for the FBI to be doing, gathering up all the video records of what actually happened. Five frames were released, but under surreptitious circumstances, they had the wrong dates and times. I think it was a pilot project to see how they flew. Four of them mm-hmm. showed expanding fireball. Exactly one of them showed, which was conveniently labeled plane, showed the image of a relatively small aircraft just above the gate mechanism with a billowing
right.
white exhaust smoke. And I discussed this with pilots and aeronautical engineers, and that white exhaust smoke cannot be from the jet engines, which would be dark black, but appears to be from the solid propellant of a rocket. The plane is, whose silhouette you can see is much too small, only about half the size to be a Boeing 757. So that I asked Jack White, an expert on films and photography I knew from JFK, who became interested in 9/11 as well, to size the image of a 757 to the tail of that plane, and he did so, and the 757 is more than twice as long. In fact, it looks now, based upon the analysis of Dennis Camino, that that's more likely to be a Global Hawk, which is better described as an unmanned aerial vehicle, uh-huh. because there was some evidence there in terms of tiny, tiny little pieces that could have come from a Global Hawk, which would have been an appropriate delivery vessel system for delivering the missile into the Pentagon.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, I am going to include today the photos of the Pentagon on 9/11. So, the link to it that I got off Veterans Today. Because people need to be able to see it to remember, because this is not something we can forget or get past, because we're living in post 9/11 apocalypse police state of the United States. So people have to pay attention. Now, people can also go to YouTube. I'm sure it's still there. I'm sure you remember, Jim. When they interviewed Rumsfeld, he said, and you can see it, "I was in the building when the missile hit."
Yes.
You can't get clearer than that. You can't tell me somebody like Donald Rumsfeld doesn't know the difference between a plane and a missile.
Yes.
So I think it was a Freudian slip, to tell you the truth.
Oh, I'm inclined to agree with you today, Maria. I certainly do. And if you go to that article entitled "Reflections on the Pentagon, a 9/11 Photographic Review with Dennis Camino and me," you'll find right off the bat a really informative photograph showing the two civilian lime green fire trucks who happened to be in the vicinity and extinguished the very modest fires there almost immediately. And you'll see the perfectly clear, green, unblemished lawn. There's no debris from any aircraft there at all, which wouldn't start showing up for 15 or 20 minutes more.
Right. Well, you know, it's interesting because I'm getting, you know, different articles and different reports from different people on, of course, on 9/11 and the irregularities and the freaky things. And somebody sent me a whole list of, and I forget where the article was from, but a whole list on September 10th. And I'm looking through it, and I don't know, Jim, maybe I'm the last person in America that remembers one of the more important things that no one else has ever talked about or brought up about September 10th. You know, we hear about FEMA in New York. You know, we've talked about that. The unusual trading in the market. Bush already had war plans on his desk. The people that canceled their flights beforehand. But the most important thing to me was I had been covering the stolen election of 2000 for a full year at that point. And it was September 10th that they were supposed to announce the results of the recount that those five major news consortiums went to Florida to do. But as soon
You're absolutely right. That is a stunning realization. And of course, they deferred it in the interest of the nation's best interest and did not report that Al Gore, had all the votes been counted, would have won Florida and therefore the presidential election and be the president of the United States. That essentially the Republican machine and a derelict decision by the Supreme Court had cost the Democrats a victory in 2000. It was shocking.
Right. And look at how many years now we've suffered because of the Supreme Court, you know, as I call them, the Supreme Court of Injustice. What Bush did to this nation, his wars that Obama has now taken over and accelerated in other countries, and how different it would have been. So, you know, Bush literally hit the trifecta on 9/11.
Yeah, he even said that himself. He said, "I hit the trifecta."
What an asshole.
What a remarkable comment from the President of the United States.
Well, you know, these people make me sick because I was reading in the New York Times this morning. They had a picture of him sitting with Bill Clinton. I guess the two cousins are chumming around together. And they're all laughing and blowing smoke up each other's ass. And Clinton saying what a great job Bush did in office. And Bush is saying, oh, how much comfort he got because he and Clinton were always on the phone during his administration. People have to understand, we haven't had a decent president since John Kennedy.
You know, I liked Bill Clinton for quite a long while. I even forgave him for Monica, but that he brought us NAFTA and the WTO is inexcusable. Remember Ross Perot saying that giant sucking sound you hear will be all those jobs going south. He had it exactly right. Bill Clinton betrayed the nation by promoting those moves, and they've done untold damage in zapping the United States, really depriving of its manufacturing and industrial base.
Absolutely. You know, let's not leave out George Bush Sr., who started selling us out to China before Clinton got in. But I remember when I was doing terrestrial radio before the internet, all the trips that Clinton was making to China and remarking on air, you know, what's he selling us out for now? And no one paid attention to all those trips Clinton was making all those years. Yeah, so.
Yeah, it is shocking and disturbing in retrospect, especially now today when we see the devastation it has wrought. I mean, average American incomes have been dropping for the first time since the end of World War II. The middle class has been vitiated. There's practically nowhere to turn for any relief. The banks have made out like bandits with all kinds of money to replenish their coffers at the expense of the taxpayers. It's as though the beat goes on and on and on and on, and the taxpayer pays and pays and pays and pays. There's no relief at all.
Right. And, you know, I'm not saying that Al Gore would have made a better president. What I knew intuitively that Bush would have been the worst possible thing to happen to this country. And I remember saying that on my show, if Bush gets in, this country's over. The world is over because he has no environmental stance whatsoever. Well, let's take a look at the environment today. Okay. Everybody's self-regulating, which means no regulations. You know, we've got radiation coming out of New Mexico. We've got radiation, you know, coming out of Fukushima. You know, everything in this country, the food supply is filthy and polluted. You know, they're allowing Nestle to suck out water from drought-stricken California and Colorado now. I mean, it's just, this country is unrecognizable to me, which is why I became so political right before the 2000 election, because I knew it was the beginning of the end. And truthfully, Jim, I thought the stolen election would be the biggest story I'd ever cover in my life. And man, was I wrong.
You sure were wrong, because they got into office in order to pursue the project of the New American Century proposal to have a catalyzing catastrophic event to seize the historical moment that takes us back to the dissolution of the Soviet Union in 1990-91. The military-industrial complex needed a new international boogeyman to justify the expenditure of hundreds of billions more dollars from the taxpayer for bombs, bullets, and airplanes that really were not needed with the demise of the international communist menace. But the new boogeyman they designed was a shadowy, elusive enemy with no geographical boundaries, where you could appeal to a terrorist act anytime you want and arrange it, and who is in the position to contradict you, where they targeted the Muslim nations because it would also give an edge to the international banking cartels. Since Islam takes a dim view of usury, it would be an opportunity to create new central banks across the Middle East, where the first action of the rebel group in Libya was to found a new central bank, which told me all I needed to know about what was going on. And, of course, to fight all these wars in the Middle East on behalf of Israel by defeating and dismantling all the modern Arab states that served as a counterbalance to Israeli domination of the Middle East.
Well, isn't it something to think about that Israel never seems to have any terrorists attack them, ISIS, Al-Qaeda? Nobody seems to go into Israel.
They are very clever at distraction, Maria. Mm-hmm. Very clever. And they're the foremost practitioners of terrorism in the world today. You can go back to the bombing of the King David Hotel in 1946, when Ergun terrorists dressed as Arabs sought to drive the British out of Palestine. You can go to 1967, when the Israelis strafed and torpedoed the USS Liberty, an American spy ship, in an attempt to make it look as though it had been sunk by the Egyptians to draw the U.S. in on Israel's side in the Six Days War. Miraculously, the ship didn't sink, but a tremendous amount of damage was done to American sailors and to the ship itself. In 1972 and 74, they perpetrated false flag attacks on their own embassy in Buenos Aires, and then 2 years later on the Jewish Community Center, because they hadn't killed enough to make big splash in the news, punishing Argentina for its cooperation with Iran in the peaceful development of nuclear energy. The 9/11, of course, was the granddaddy of them all, where it's very clear that this was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons in the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. And, you know, there's a tremendous amount of evidence that supports it. There's a book by Christopher Bolin that's very good. Alan Sabrowski has given many lectures about it. There is a website I highly recommend, Israel Did 9/11, All the Proof in the World, with the qualification that it wasn't Israel alone, but it was aided and abetted by the CIA and the neocons.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's go back to September 10th. I'm sure you remember, but I'm sure a lot of people don't, and for new listeners, that FEMA just happened to be in New York on September 10th. Now, why would they be there a day before 9/11?
It is a remarkable coincidence, isn't it, Maria?
Well, and didn't Jeb Bush also declare a state of emergency in Florida on the 8th?
I think that's right, yes, which is remarkable all by itself. I mean, you know, the people are getting ahead of the script here, just like James Stanley of the BBC announcing that the Solomon Brothers building, WTC 7, had collapsed at 4:57 when the event wouldn't actually take place for another 23 minutes. One of the most stunning examples of collusion between intelligence agencies and the mass media, where they got ahead of the script and they've never been able to explain it.
Right. Well, it's, you know, it's absolute proof. You can watch that video still online everywhere, where she's saying Building 7 came down, and you clearly see Building 7 behind her in the video. So, you know, I try to tell people when they're watching mass media, all they're watching is scripted lies that the CIA wants you to know. I mean, yesterday I had a news story that one of the ex-writers at the Tribune newspapers admitted that the CIA has to check a lot of their stories before they put them out. I mean, how much more do people need to know? And then you got this Saudi billionaire who owns 50% of Fox News. Well, what kind of news are we getting there?
And, of course, William Colby, the former director, observed that the CIA owns everyone of significance in the major media, echoing the findings of Carl Bernstein published in Rolling Stone in 1977, The CIA and the Media, in which he reported that agency officials were boasting that their greatest successes had been with Time Life, The New York Times, and CBS. Anyone familiar with the media at that period in time realizes if you had a lock on them, you had a lock on news distribution in the United States.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, you know, people have to, you can't afford to have a short memory, because somebody sent me a poster right before the show and it was so excellent. It just said, you know, 9/11 was basically the birth of the New World Order. And when you look at the world and what's happened since, how can you argue that?
And the Smith-Mutt Bill of 1948, which precluded the use of techniques of propaganda and disinformation within the United States, was qualified by NDAA 2013 that now permits that to take place. And we're being besieged now by a whole range of techniques of propaganda and misinformation that were not in the past legal, but they have been made legal today, Maria. You cannot any longer believe anything the government tells you. If you ever could.
Now, well, to me, the government's always guilty until they prove themselves innocent. Sort of like how they treat us. Well, what about, you know, on September 10th, how many people got phone calls not to fly, and how many people at the Pentagon changed their flights or canceled their flights?
No, you're absolutely right. Willie Brown, a very popular, prominent politician in California, reported that he was told not to fly that day, and others have issued similar reports. I even got a phone call from a little old lady in Brooklyn telling me that their rabbi had told the members of the synagogue not to go into Lower Manhattan that day. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was very widely known that this was going to take place. It simply wasn't shared with the public or those they wanted to use as the victims for an event that would bring about a number of casualties, roughly approximate to equal to those that died on Pearl Harbor, and where they began calling it a new Pearl Harbor, just as in the documents from the Project for the New American Century, which had bemoaned the fact that with the demise of the Soviet Union, there was a unique historical opportunity for the United States to move into the Middle East and to exert military and diplomatic pressure outward from that geopolitically sensitive area to create a new American empire that would endure for the next 100 years, but that the American people might be too slow on the uptake to realize, unless there was a unique opportunity, a traumatizing event, a catalytic event like Pearl Harbor, to cause them to change their minds and become alert that there was this opportunity to exploit, mm-hmm. where it was used, therefore, to manipulate the American people into reversals of our foreign policy and to become an aggressor nation, and also, of course, to compromise the Constitution by the passage of the Patriot Act, a very, very dismal outcome indeed.
Absolutely, absolutely. But back to Bush's trifecta. I mean, now it's knowledge, you know, it's common knowledge that Bush planned to hit Iraq before he even stole the election.
And it's so tragic because, you know, Susan Lindauer was a liaison between Saddam Hussein and the CIA, and Saddam was so eager to avoid war with the United States that he told Susan that he'd be glad to buy 1 million cars a year for the next 10 years if the U.S. would not attack them. And then he added on, and if that's not enough, make it 20. We know that the automobile industry has tremendous multiplier effects because all kinds of products are involved in making automobiles. Rubber for tires, leather for upholstery, components for computers, for stereos and all of that, clocks and the whole shebang. Imagine where Detroit would be if instead of spending these trillions of dollars on an ill-fated misadventure in Iraq that we had taken Saddam up, the whole world would be different today, Maria, and the Iraqi people would be overwhelmingly better off than they are now.
Well, you know, I had interviewed Susan, and, you know, this would go back to, you know, you, for me and you, I mean, for our shows, I always jump back and forth between 9/11 and JFK because it's so easy to do that with you. But what's interesting is they locked her up until after 9/11 and then released her afterwards so she couldn't spill the beans. And that reminded me of Abraham Bolden, who was the first black Secret Service guy that Kennedy had pulled into the ranks. And because he spoke out about the poor protection around Kennedy and that he was afraid they were going to kill him, they locked him up until after the deed was done.
Well, it's all completely outrageous. And, of course, as you know, we have more than 15 indications of Secret Service complicity in setting JFK up for the hip. They left the two agents who would have ridden on the limousine or run beside it at Love Field. They put the vehicles in the wrong position with JFK out front when he should have been in the middle. They canceled the fatbed truck that should have preceded the president for reporters and camera crews to cover the event. They ordered the 112th Military Intelligence Unit, which should have been distributed through the city for crowd control, to stand down over the adamant opposition of its commanding officer. They didn't weld the manhole covers. They didn't cover the open windows. They let the crowd spill 8, 10, 12 deep out into the street. They changed the motorcade route 4 days before, which they never do. They cut the motorcycle escort down to 4 and directed them not to ride forward of the rear wheels. They did a 110-degree turn from Houston onto Elm Street, another violation of Secret Service protocol. Lo and behold, the driver, William Greer, actually pulled the limousine to a halt to make sure JFK would be killed after bullets had begun to be fired. There's more, but that gives you an indication of the big picture.
Right. Well, then you look at all these stories of the Secret Service, you know, drinking, drugging, cavorting with prostitutes when they're supposed to be protecting our first black president. So certain things haven't changed. You know, it's like the longer this country goes on, to me, and I'm sure to you too, Jim, this has become so transparent to me. You know, I can look at these stories and just see right through them now. And maybe it's because you and I have lived through both events.
Yeah, I think that's right, Maria. I mean, you detect the pattern taking place.
Yeah, I mean,
And once you understand the nature of conspiracies, which are ubiquitous, you cannot read a single edition of the New York Times, for example, without finding a story that entails a conspiracy on every single page. You begin to understand what's really going on in the world. You combine that with an understanding of what's known as limited utilitarianism, which is a group acting to benefit its own members regardless of the consequences for others. And you realize that the Third Reich and the Mafia and General Motors are acting as limited utilitarian entities, and Israel, most manifestly of all, promoting the interests of Israel regardless of the costs of the rest of the world. It's disgusting, but we have to come to grips with it and understand it if we're going to deal with it.
All right, absolutely. And, you know, even if you look at the story in Ferguson, and the Ferguson Police Department was one of the police departments that were sent to Israel to be trained by their police. So
this, you know, that's fascinating, Maria. I was unaware of that, but it makes great sense.
Right.
All this business with fusion centers, which are merging federal, state, and local anti-terrorist activity, has been very, very bad for the country. It's a way of the Homeland Security exerting its influence all the way to the local police level and giving the local police departments all this surplus military equipment under the Pentagon Program 1033 has been a disaster.
Right.
Allowing Israelis to train our people is a calamity.
I totally agree. And look at all the ass-kissing politicians that went over to Israel while Israel was conducting its genocide on Gaza. You know, everybody from Cuomo of New York to, you know, most of Congress, they had to go over and kiss Israel's ass instead of saying we're not going to support this genocide.
Maria, I was horrified when I discovered that the United States was resupplying the Israelis with munitions as they continued their assault and the slaughter of Palestinians in Gaza.
Well, what did you think about the White House saying they didn't know they were rearming them? I said, what bullshit?
Right.
I mean, come on. You know,
like they didn't know all those weapons, all those planes, bombs, and tanks were American-made, that we, the American taxpayer has been supporting, you know, breaking its back to support Israel in its attempts to dominate the world.
Right.
Corrupt our own politician using American taxpayer money. It's as bad as it can get.
Right. To say they didn't know reminded me of that old song, which you probably remember. I didn't know the gun was loaded. Remember that?
I didn't know the gun was loaded.
Jim, we're going to take a break. When we come back, let's talk about this war on terror, which was never defined. And that article you sent me on ISIS, which is a government agency, another CIA fabrication, signaling nuclear terrorism, predicting a 9/11 dirty bomb, false flag attack. So stay with us. Jim and I will be right back.
I'm sure you're enjoying the information you're hearing on this episode of the Maria Heller Show. Heard internationally at maria.net. Did you know that Maria does 4 shows a week and has over 1,000 hours of excellent informative shows on her site? Maria's been at this for years, and you get the benefit of the best education anywhere for a subscription of choice. Your subscription gives you total access to the entire site, the archives, and the new shows, all without any commercial interruptions, thanks to the show being supported by those who appreciate the truth. The site's available 24/7 and all the shows are downloadable for your favorite device. Enjoy the second half of this show and then come over to maria.net, that's M-E-R-I-A.net, and pick a subscription of your choice. It's a win-win for all of us. Now back to this excellent show.
Okay, welcome back to Roaring Truth, and as you can tell, Jim and I are in one of those roaring moods, but I don't know when we're not. Jim, Bush the Idiot King comes out and he says, we have a war on terror, never gave us the definition of terror, never gave us the definition of terrorism, tells us that we never had terror in America, which is a lie, because I remember the Mormons, I think, were credited with the first terror attack in this country when they attacked that band of people way back when, and I forget what that Mormon slaughter was called. Then you had the terror attack when they tried to kill one of our earlier presidents, but the guy's gun didn't go off, and the president kicked him to the ground. But when you had Bush the Idiot King in office, he starts with a war on terror. Never have we gotten a definition of terrorism. And I had said right then and there, 9/11 happened and we all got convicted. And 13 years later, the proof is in the pudding.
Oh, Maria, you put it very well. In fact, the whole idea of a war on terror was constructed on the fiction that 19 Islamic hijackers had commandeered these 4 commercial carriers and perpetrated these atrocities under the control of a guy off in a cave in Afghanistan. It's about as ludicrous as it gets when you become serious about it. We have discovered, for example, that the government has never been able to show any of the alleged hijackers were aboard any of those planes. Elias Davidson has published extensively on this. Uh-huh. All the phone calls that were alleged to have been made from the planes were either impossible or fabrications. A.K. Dewdney established that then-available cell phones were useless above 2,000-foot altitude and speeds over 200 miles an hour, mm-hmm. while David Ray Grissman has demonstrated all the calls allegedly made from the 9/11 aircraft were fabricated or fake. None of them was authentic. Even the FBI has to admit that Barbara Olson, the right-wing commentator, allegedly aboard the plane that is supposed to have hit the Pentagon, never completed a call to her husband, Ted Olson, who was then the Solicitor General of the United States, where Olson gave 3 different versions of the calls he claimed that she had made, but it was all complete fiction. Colonel George Nelson, U.S. Air Force retired, has observed that of the millions of uniquely identifiable component parts from those 4 airplanes, the government has yet to produce even one. Leslie Raphael from Scotland has demonstrated that the French film crew, the Naudet brothers, to have been in the right position to film the first strike, 100 improbable factors had to converge. Killtown, among others, has shown the absence of any proof that Flight 93 crashed in Shanksville, where pilots for 9/11 Truth have established that it was over Champaign-Urbana, Illinois, after it had allegedly crashed.
Right.
The videos of Flight 175 entering the South Tower display feats that no real plane could perform, where pilots have also established that it was over Harrisburg and Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, long after it had allegedly hit the South Tower. And Maria, FAA registration records show that the planes used for Flights 93 and 175 were not even formally taken out of service or deregistered until 28 September 2005, which would be impossible had they crashed in 2001.
Right.
People don't seem to appreciate the significance of the first point that David Ray Griffin makes in his magisterial work, The 9/11 Commission Report, Omissions and Distortions, which is that a half a dozen of those alleged suicide hijackers turned up alive and well the following day, where even Mohammed Atta, the alleged ringleader's father, reported that his son had called him, terrified, explained he had nothing to do with it, and where his passport somehow miraculously survived the complete and total destruction of the South Tower and was found on the sidewalk.
Right. And, you know, it makes me, you know, I always refer back to 9/11 as much as I can on any news story I've had since. And I thought that it was pretty crazy that Obama was demanding on flight MH17 that went down in the Ukraine, demanding the black boxes. And Russia, of course, you know, immediately said, we'll turn over the black boxes. We want to know what's in it. We still haven't seen the black boxes from 9/11. It's like they disappeared into a black hole.
Well, you know, an FBI official was asked why, for the first time in its history, the National Transportation Safety Board had not investigated any of those four crashes. And he said it wasn't necessary because we saw them on television. But we didn't see what happened in Shanksville on television. The two reporters first on the scene said that the eerie aspect of the crash site was there was no indication that any plane had crashed there. The coroner said there were no body parts. He ceased being medical examiner after 15 minutes. He never even saw a speck of blood. The claim was, given the absence of debris from a 110-ton airliner with a 125-foot wingspan, that it had disappeared into an abandoned mine shaft. Maria, this is so ludicrous. We know what to do with miners trapped in mine shafts. We get out the bright lights and the heavy equipment and dig 24/7 in the hope that by some miracle someone might have survived. But in the case in Shanksville, we didn't even do that for the alleged 45 passengers and crew that were supposed to be aboard the plane. Nothing like that was done. It's a complete fantasy.
Well, that's the other irregularity, if you think about it. How few people were on any of these planes?
Oh, you're absolutely right. And the Pentagon trajectory turns out to be neither aerodynamically nor physically possible, according to the government. Flight 77, another Boeing 757, came into the Pentagon just barely skimming the ground at over 500 miles an hour. That's not even aerodynamically possible because what is known as downdraft, I've discussed this with aeronautical engineers and pilots, that plane, because of downdraft at that speed, could not have got closer than 60 or even 80 feet to the ground, where 80 feet is higher than the Pentagon is tall. So that's one impossibility. Another is if it had taken out a succession of lampposts at that speed, it would have had the same effect had the plane been stationary, hit by lampposts going 500 miles an hour. They would have ripped holes in the wing. The fuel would have mixed with the oxygen, burst into flame, and the plane would have gone in a fiery mess into the lawn. But we've already seen photographs. The lawn is perfectly clear and free of debris.
Right.
And as you observed, the number of passengers allegedly aboard that plane was 64.
And wasn't that plane, I think it was the one out of the Pentagon, wasn't that the one that was loaded with a lot of people that were in the service, cops, you know, this kind of thing, military people? You would think if that was the case, they would have taken out a little guy with a box cutter.
And when you realize that that plane was not, the plane used for that flight was not deregistered until 28 September 2005, when you realize the pilots for 9/11 Truth studying air ground communication was able to establish that while the plane was in the air that day, it was over Champaign-Urbana, Illinois, after it had allegedly crashed. I mean, VAC 77, Maria, wasn't even in the air that day. We have studied Bureau of Transportation Statistics records where Gerard Holmgren, who was an Australian blues musician, was the first to make this notice that that flight and Flight 11, the North Tower, the Pentagon flight and the North Tower flight were even scheduled for that day, which means we have two planes that went even in the air that day. How could they possibly have crashed on 9/11?
Right.
And with regard to the other two, they're alleged to have crashed on 9/11, but they were still in the air afterwards and not deregistered until 28 September 2005, four years later.
Right. And didn't one of them supposedly land in Cleveland, Ohio?
93 may have landed in Cleveland, Ohio. A very interesting narrative about 9/11 constructed over that hypothesis is by Art Olivier entitled Operation Terror.
Oh, yeah.
I recommend it to everyone because it gives cohesion.
Mm-hmm.
One of the problems with some of the 9/11 groups that is taking place today, such as Richard Gage had a recent appearance on C-SPAN, is he did not talk about who was responsible or why 9/11 happened. I think if the American people don't understand the who and the why, they're not going to be able to put all the pieces together.
Mm-hmm.
And when he's talking about an obscure incendiary masquerading as an explosive, that makes it all the more difficult. They're putting up a huge billboard in New York City showing the destruction of Building 7, but they need to add that interview with Larry Silverstein, where he says that he made the decision to pull the building.
My.
If they put that in, and then you see the building coming down, and understand the word pull is a construction term for a controlled demolition, then that's going to have some impact. But just to show that Building 3 came down is not going to do it all by itself.
Right. But I know that's always been his thing. He tries to attract people just on the weirdness of Building 7. And he doesn't want to go past that because I've had that discussion with him, and that's okay. You know, it's like whatever.
Well,
but what I wanted to talk to you about, Jim, we only have about 10 minutes left, so I wanted to talk to you about that article you sent me by John Kimber.
Yeah.
Which is on Veterans Today. And he is saying that, you know, he's got his reasons and they look legitimate to predict and defeat a new false flag attack happening this week, because whenever we seem to get the news and we put it out there, they always seem to change their plan. So I think it's important to talk about some of the points there, because I recently saw that the UK also lifted their threats level to severe, even though they have nothing, no intel, nothing to back that up.
It all appears to be part and parcel of elevating ISIS to this significant threat that, in my opinion, it does not pose. If they're having to fabricate phony beheadings, for example, and it's very clear that those are staged and not real, and when it comes out of nowhere and all of a sudden is this huge menace, you know something is terribly, terribly wrong. And as I may have already mentioned, I believe it's to justify getting NATO forces into Iraq and Syria, which are then going to be turned against Assad's army. I'm apprehensive to say that it appears to be a deceit, a bait and switch, a con job.
Right. Well, you know, ISIS, which, you know, I've had so many stories on and published so much stuff, is really another one of our wonderful creations brought to you by the CIA, and I'm sure also the Mossad, as a matter of fact. But one of the things that's a little scary that John writes in his article was that ISIS was conveniently left 88 pounds of uranium compounds in Mosul in July, which is perfect for making dirty bombs and dirty bomb predictive programming.
Well, believe it or not, Gordon Duff has published enough information to make it clear that actually that amount of material would be sufficient to make a fission bomb, something considerably more powerful than a dirty bomb. So if you're just talking about the elements there, it is rather striking that so much material, radioactive material, would be available, just happened to be left for ISIS, whatever it is, to scoop it up.
Right. Well, you know, there's also an ISIS, which has been exposed at the Ronald Reagan building in D.C., which is basically a paramilitary spy agency, also named ISIS, which is, you know, pretty much under government control.
I think there's such a company that John McCain is an owner, of which John McCain is an owner. It may be the same ISIS, Maria. John McCain plays a very strange role in all of this. He has gone to Iraq and Syria and met with the rebels. He may have even met with ISIS leaders to extend them his support. I think it's very, very strange. Everyone needs to pay attention to John McCain's bizarre behavior under these circumstances.
Right. And then, of course, let's not leave out, you know, the predictive programming. So much, yeah. You know, pointing to, you know, a nuclear terrorist attack in the United States. You know, the story I started off this show with, saying how, you know, the Southwest is under, you know, under threat of an attack. If indeed they want to go into Syria, Iran, and the, you know, finish off their list of seven countries, what better way to do it than another attack on the United States? I mean, people have to understand, just like Israel with those bullshit story, those three kidnapped teenagers, they'll use whatever they have to do and kill their own people to get what they want.
That's right. That's exactly right. In fact, even the shoot down of the Malaysian airliner in Ukraine appears to have been deliberately contrived to distract the world's attention from Israel launching its onslaught against the Palestinian people. It occurred within minutes of those events, and I think it's impossible to ignore, as Franklin Delano Roosevelt observed, in politics, there are no coincidences. This would have been quite a remarkable coincidence had it not been planned in advance.
Mm-hmm. Right. So to me, when I get these stories, you know, I don't like to put out fear out there, but I want to expose it just in case these writers are right. Because I know we've probably stopped a lot of different things from happening in this country because of what we do.
Another point Kimber makes is that the neocons who are behind most false flag operations, including, of course, 9/11, or hyping the ISIS threat, where Lieutenant General McInerney has even suggested attacks specifically on 9/11, partly to bury a new book about the Benghazi scandal that's due out on the 9th, but where the fake assassination of Osama bin Laden in 2011 buried Obama's fake birth certificate issue, and the Sandy Hook hoax buried his treasonous preparations for the U.S. Civil War military coup. With actually, it's over 2 billion hollow point bullets, 40 caliber, accumulated by DHS. I published on the bin Laden hoax in an article entitled Zero Dark 30, The Deeper, Darker Truths.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it was a story, I think it came out finally maybe a week or so ago, that none of the sailors witnessed the supposed burial at sea. There's no emails, there's nothing on it.
Yeah, he actually died in Afghanistan on December 15th of 2001. He was buried in an unmarked grave. There were local obituaries at the time. Even Fox News, interestingly, published a notice of his death on the 26th of December that's still online. Nicholas Kohlstrom, an historian of science and student of 7/7, 9/11, and other events, published an article entitled Osama bin Laden, 1957 to 2001. David Ray Griffin has published a whole book about it entitled Osama bin Laden, Dead or Alive.
Right.
But even the FBI was forced to admit, when asked why a wanted poster for Osama bin Laden said nothing about 9/11, it had to admit that they had no hard evidence that connected Osama bin Laden to 9/11. The whole thing was contrived.
Right, and it just seems like every other, you know, every other month they have a new, this is the guy that planned 9/11. You know, it's like they don't even mention bin Laden anymore.
Yeah, and well, they should not, because that was a very embarrassing stunt. Where they even faked, you know, staged this little photograph claiming they were creating the appearance that they were watching the event go down in real time on a large screen television.
Right.
Until Leon Panetta, then director of the CIA, said there was no live coverage for the first 20 minutes or 25 minutes, which was a total lapse time it took to conduct the whole operation, which meant there was no live coverage of the event at all.
Right. But I remember the picture, too, where they're all sitting there like a selfie photo. You know, and they all have shock and horror on their faces, and meanwhile they're watching a blank screen. I mean, it's bad theater. That's all we get. We get bad theater passing as news and facts.
Maria, it's appallingly, but practically all the news that we get anymore is fabricated or fake, phony, not reliable, untrue. You can find more accurate information from Press TV or Russia Today than you can in the New York Times. That's a pathetic level to which we have sunk in the United States of America today.
I know, it's pretty sad. Well, anyway, let's keep our fingers crossed that we can stave off another false flag. Jim, I want to thank you so much for joining me today. As usual, it was a pretty hot show.
Great pleasure, Maria. I look forward to future events absent some catastrophic intervening event.
Right. All right. Well, you take care of yourself, Jim.
You too.
Bye. Jim Fetzer, check out his work at veteranstoday.com. He's not only a professor, he's a veteran himself. And, man, his body of work is huge. Anyway, thanks for listening and supporting the show. Tomorrow, my guest will be Karen Noe, and we're going to talk about her book, Your Life After Their Death. So we'll definitely be switching gears. So until then, put up some posters. If you're on social media, start putting up some posters questioning 9/11. Remind people of the lies we were told. And I'll see you guys tomorrow.
Thank you for listening and supporting the Maria Show. Tell others what you learned today. Knowledge becomes wisdom only when it's shared. Encourage others to subscribe today. www.maria.net. Often imitated, never duplicated. A world of information all in one place. www.maria.net. Always ahead of the curve. Always on your side. Get active or get radioactive. Subscribe today.